Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll get started right away. This is the investable field of opportunity for Core Energy. It covers upstream to downstream. And what we're seeking to do, and what we continue to seek to do, is to avail these infrastructure assets, these real property assets in our REIT structure, to investors, whether they be tax exempt, whether they be U.S. or non-U.S. Two of my partners and myself came from an MLP background, and when we established Core Energy, the focus was differentiating access to capital. And so we struggled with some of the same dilemmas that all of us in the MLP space have had, and that is you're really denied access to tax exempts, you're denied access to non-U.S. investors, and that's because of K-1s, it's because of UBTI on tax exempt, and it's very importantly due to effectively connected income for foreign investors. So the model that Core Energy sought was more like utilities and other REITs, and that was mostly institutional investors. And you can see there's a big disparity between the MLP space, that which has about less than a third on average of institutional investors, not counting sponsors, in comparison to REITs, utilities, and core. So this access to relatively low cost of capital and this investable universe that we have as a REIT is very large, we think spells tremendous opportunity in going forward to continue to grow our company. Well, 2016 was a very tough year in the sense of sitting back and watching two of the parents of our tenants file Chapter 11, but it was a very good year for our stock price. We were as low as $12 and got up to, and we're trading today right around $35, $36 a share. So it's been a windfall. Hopefully all of you in the audience have been core investors and you've benefited from that. But at the same time, the backdrop of that was pretty tough, in that even though we felt really good about the integrity of our lease structure, action speaks a lot louder than words, and it's wonderful to have seen that every single month through that Chapter 11 process, our rent payments came in on time, every single time. In November, the U.S. Bankruptcy Court accepted our Pinedale lease as is with no economic change whatsoever. And the Energy 21 bankruptcy, the entity that is our tenant, was never even in bankruptcy. But the parent has successfully come out as of December 30th. The important aspects of our lease are many, but the provisions are intended to be transparent and also very protective. So first and foremost, when we get together with a prospective operating partner, we sell the transparency of our process, and it's customized to meet certain needs that they have. But everything is really based on fair market value. So we can't pay more than fair market value for an asset, but we can customize and satisfy certain needs that they may have. We appeal to operators who are emotionally attached to their assets that we're interested in monetizing, and they do not and cannot afford to lose operational control. That's how come you survive bankruptcies, because you underwrite critical assets, and critical is a word that's thrown all about, but its very essence is, on a company basis, is this company's revenue stream cannot survive without this asset. Those are the only assets we're interested in buying, and when we have gotten a little bit off-center on that, and we did that on some very small mortgages in related to water disposal, it taught us to get right back in the fairway. And those were very small deals, less than $20 million combined, and our mainstay is leases with quality operators that cannot afford to lose control of their assets. The other important attribute I want to point out about our leases is an operator cannot diminish the value of our asset. So even though we seek out critical assets, long economic lives, and assets that are not easily replicated, our operating partner cannot diminish the value of our asset by competing with it. If they do, then that's a default of our lease. These are our four largest assets. We've mentioned Pinedale and Grand Isle. Both of these assets have terminal value risk, and that's one of the risks that we have to take to satisfy operating lease treatment. Terminal value risk, though, when you're dealing with assets that are right next to the production source in the field, you really want to know and understand the upstream end of the story, okay? And we've put a lot of time there. I'm a petroleum engineer and a petroleum geologist, have spent most of my career in the upstream industry. But if you look at the Pinedale field has got an inventory, according to the company, of about 4,900 well locations. This is the sixth largest natural gas field in the country. At the current drilling pace, that would spell out 35 more years of drilling. And even when that last well is drilled, those wells have an average life of about 35 years. So even on an expedited drilling basis, you're talking well in excess of 50 years of remaining life on the Pinedale. On Energy 21, the two best of the seven fields in terms of well life are in West Delta 30 and West Delta 73 have lives of 20 to 25 years. That drilling program, once it gets reignited here, hopefully soon, and we have reason to believe it will, is going to go on well in excess of the length of our lease. The MoGas pipeline in our press release that you may have had a chance to see yesterday, there was news related to our MoGas pipeline in that we have a few different customers, but our largest customer, Laclede Gas, I'm sorry, this is St. Louis Natural Gas Utility. We renegotiated our agreement. Now, this is not a lease because we operate MoGas, but we renegotiated our agreement with that customer to take it from year-to-year renewal to a 13-year term. Okay, so now, and that's for the same reservation quantity. So what did we have to give up to do that, and why did we do that? Well, what we had to give up is we had to lower the rate. Okay, and we lowered the rate pretty significantly. And why did we do it? Why did we even consider doing this? Well, it's more, the tenure is more in sync with the rest of our assets and what we aim to deliver to our shareholders, and that is long-term leases. But the other thing that was happening external to our ability to control was basin dynamics on REX pipeline in January. This January, the REX pipeline had an expansion project finished, which is availing Zone 3, which includes St. Louis, to Appalachian, Marcellus, and Utica gas. So much cheaper gas is coming in, and now we find ourselves, as the operator of that asset, dealing with a customer who had some optionality. And so this was a solution that we felt was best for everybody, and it is going to result in a revenue hit, which we think in the 20 months before it happens will be easily overcome by some other activities that we're pursuing. But it's out there, and I want everybody to be aware of it. As a REIT, as opposed to an MLP, what you're focused here on is AFFO. And so think of funds from operations in the same way as you would earnings per share, but then the adjusted funds from operation is really more of a true measure of what is presented to the shareholders. And our AFFO has been steady at about $1.25, and that stability, and that stability has allowed us to maintain our dividend where it is, and we're very confident of the durability of that dividend. We have about $60 million of availability. That's our line, as well as some cash. We have incorporated and demonstrated an ability to raise capital in a multitude of different ways. We have very strong banking support. We have a lot of banking encouragement right now with the outlook of 2017. Our deal pipeline is very strong right now. Last year, 2016, two of our tenants' parents were going through bankruptcy. We certainly weren't going to hit the equity markets last year, right? And we're not a company that likes to lever up to do acquisitions. And so we sat fairly idle on the acquisition front purposely. This year, we are we're looking very strong in terms of deal flow. We're very particular what we invest in, of course, and as said earlier, if it's not a critical asset, the company doesn't rely on it, come what high water may come, we're not interested in the asset. But we're really feeling good about what we can do this year. Dividend stability, it's all spelled out in the same type of attributes that we've been talking about. I think it's important for everybody to realize that our lease payments are field-level operating expenses, okay? In order for the field to operate, in order for the fields to produce, they need to pay our bill, our rent, every month. And therefore, as an operating expense, it really is senior to even bank debt. And that's evidenced by having gone through these two Chapter 11 processes and with no disruption to our rents whatsoever. And we believe that the $3 dividend is very stable, and with time and with growth, we intend and hope to deliver on growth on that aspect as well. Okay, that's it. I tried to be as quickly as possible, but I think we've got time for a couple questions. Does anyone have questions? Yes, sir.
So the four assets that you highlighted is what percentage of the portfolio?
That is about, 90, Leslie? This is Leslie Robert Shaw. She is our manager of IR. What is it, Leslie? It's in excess of 95%, would you say, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what's the estimated hit from the gas extension?
Yeah.
On a program basis?
Well, the revenue loss, and this doesn't occur in really until 2019 will be the first year that this will impact. The revenue hit would be $4.5 million for that year, and we are pursuing lots of different actions that we feel high confidence that we're going to eliminate $3 million of that exposure, if not all of it, and that has to do with pipeline connection build-outs. It happens to do with the burgeoning growth on the west side of St. Louis that we're going to be able to serve. It has to do with basin optionality and some other things. So we feel really good about overcoming that. We've got this long lead time. That was one of the incentives for us to enter into the agreement along with the tenor. Yes. Yeah. So our leases have two components. The one that we use to judge dividends on the basis of is called base rent, and that base rent is established in advance, and it escalates under an inflationary escalator, normally CPI. Then above and beyond that, we have participating rent, and participating rent is variable, and that's not something that we would ever use to judge dividends on the basis of. But that is if things go really well for our operators, we get our shareholders benefit from that, or we benefit from that, and then we can use that money for further growth to benefit our shareholders. So, yeah, I mean, our leases are out there in public, but what we'll do is we'll take a percentage of the upside revenue, and we will be rewarded that under a participating rent stream. Any other questions? Okay. Thanks, everybody. Leslie and I will be in the back of the room for a moment if you have any questions.